Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're really getting into what might be the single most critical topic for anyone dealing with high volatility.
Oh, absolutely.
Whether you're in crypto, commodities, growth stocks, it doesn't matter. You sent us this amazing stack of sources on position sizing, risk management, and I think most importantly, the psychology behind it all.
Especially in a space like DeFi. The sources, they aren't really about finding the next, 10-bagger.
No.
They're about building a fortress around your capital. So our mission today is to pull out the actual protocols, the psychological frameworks you need for sustainable growth.
The blueprint for preventing account ruin, basically.
That's it for when things inevitably go sideways.
And the central principle, and this was threaded through everything we looked at, is that position sizing is what, 80% psychology and only 20% math.
It's a behavioral science, exactly. The math, your stop loss placement, your volatility calcs, that gives you a theoretical boundary. But the psychology, that determines if you can actually stick to it when the market is screaming at you. If you get that part wrong,
You're done.
you don't survive long enough to compound. Survival is the only metric that matters at first.
Okay, let's unpack that then. The psychology. Before we even touch a formula, the sources say we need this this radical level of self-honesty. We have to figure out our actual risk tolerance, not the one we like to think we have.
Exactly. The first step is a kind of self-assessment protocol. It forces you to look at the three specific risk types that cause most portfolios to just blow up.
Right, so let's start with the big one, the one everyone is terrified of, ruin risk, the account killer.
So this is defined as losing so much capital you can't recover, financially, of course, but also psychologically. That part is
The
crucial.
psychological part.
The assessment for ruin risk is about your durability. Like, how many losing trades can you actually take before you have to pull money out for rent? And how much pain can you take before you just quit the game entirely?
And the sources draw a really clear line in the sand. There's a score, right? Below 35 out of 50 is the danger zone.
It is. That's the threshold where the probability of just irreversible damage spikes. If your score is low, your position sizing has to be extremely conservative.
And that leads to the big rule.
The big rule: to be sustainable, you never ever risk more than 2% of your total capital on one position.
2%.
Follow that, you can be wrong 10 times in a row,
That.
and you still have 80% of your capital left to fight another day. It's all about longevity.
Okay, that protects the financial base, but then there's emotional risk, the judgment destroyer.
This is where fear and greed just completely take over your strategy.
And this is that system one versus system two thing, isn't it?
Exactly. System one is your fast emotional brain, the one that panics.
Mm-hmm.
System two is your slow analytical brain that does the math. Emotional risk is when system one hijacks the car.
So what are the warning signs? How do you know system one is in charge?
The symptoms are usually behavioral tells. The classic one is just constantly checking your portfolio.
Oh, I think we can all relate to that one.
If you score, say, a 1 out of 10 on the assessment because you're checking your phone 15, 20 times a day, your position is too large. Period.
And there's a rule of thumb for this, too.
There is. If you check a position more than 3 times a day, it is simply too big for your psychological comfort zone. That obsessive checking, it's a tax on your mental energy.
The constant refreshing. I feel that. Okay, so last on the list is opportunity risk. This one feels a bit counterintuitive.
It is. The sources call it the wealth limiter. It's what happens when your positions are so small that even if you're a genius and it goes up 10x, it doesn't really move the needle on your net worth.
And that leads to bad habits.
Terrible habits, overtrading because you're bored, making desperate plays to catch up, and any small gains you do make just get eaten alive by transaction fees.
So it's a balance.
It's a critical balance. The size has to be big enough to matter if you're right, but small enough that you feel zero panic if you're wrong.
Okay, so this is where it gets really interesting. How do we actually use this psychological feedback? We have these three emotional sizing tests that are designed to do just that.
These are designed to stop us from lying to ourselves. And the first one is the most simple, but maybe the most powerful: the sleep test.
The sleep test. So how does that work in practice?
It's beautiful. If a position is keeping you up at night, you'd rate the impact on your sleep an 8, 9, or 10. Then it doesn't matter what your spreadsheet says.
It's too big.
It is too large. And the action isn't optional, it's mandatory. You reduce that position by 50% immediately. Your mind is your biggest asset, and if you're not sleeping, you're already making bad decisions for tomorrow.
That's incredibly strict. What if you have super high conviction? You think it's a sure thing?
Doesn't matter. The rule still applies.
Yeah.
This is about professional discipline. One source put it perfectly. A position that costs you sleep is a bad position, period. The goal isn't just to maximize gain, it's to preserve the trader.
Let's preserve the trader. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so next up is the comfort zone test.
This one asks you to rate your emotional state about a position from 1 to 10. The sweet spot where you can still think rationally is a 4 to 7.
Okay.
If you're at an 8, 9, or 10, you are emotionally overleveraged. You have to reduce the size. But interestingly, if you're at a 1 to 3, you barely even care about it.
You've got opportunity risk.
Exactly. You should probably consider sizing up just a little to get into that optimal 4 to 7 zone.
And then there's the really brutal one, the zero tomorrow test.
Yeah, this one is tough. You have to pause and genuinely ask yourself, if this position went to zero overnight, how would I feel?
And if the answer is devastated,
you cut it by 50% or more. Instantly. If the answer is stressed, you keep reducing the size until your honest answer is, I'd be fine. I could keep trading tomorrow. The goal is to always have enough emotional capital left in the tank.
So these emotional tests, they all feed into the actual capital allocation system, right? The conviction-based position sizing.
Precisely. You are linking your size directly to your confidence. And confidence has to be based on an objective, proven track record, not just a gut feeling.
Right. So walk us through those tiers. How are they broken down?
Okay. So for your highest conviction plays, 9 or 10 out of 10. These are your foundational assets, your Bitcoin, your Ethereum, your really battle-tested blue chip DeFi protocols. For those, you can size up to a 5% maximum.
5% max. And why is that?
Because the risk there is lower. It's more about systemic risk, not, you know, a smart contract blowing up. Now, for promising but less proven things, like layer twos, where your conviction is more like a 7 or 8 out of 10, the max size drops to 3%.
Can you just quickly explain what L2s are for anyone who might not be deep in the weeds on this?
Sure, yeah. So think of the main blockchains like Ethereum as layer ones or L1s. They're the main highway. Layer twos are like express lanes built on top to make things faster and cheaper.
Got it.
But they do introduce a new layer of technical risk. So they're promising, but not as battle tested as the L1s themselves.
Okay, so higher risk, smaller size. Makes sense. What about the really speculative stuff?
Anything new, any moonshot. If your conviction is below a 7, it drops to a 1% max size. And if you rate your conviction below a 5 out of 10, the sources are very blunt.
You do nothing.
You take no position. The risk-adjusted return just isn't worth the mental space.
Okay, so this brings us to the structural rules. The whole point here is pre-commitment, making the decision before the market gets crazy.
Pre-commitment is your firewall against your own emotions. That's why the sources require you to fill out a pre-trade risk contract.
And this isn't just a mental note.
No, you have to write it down. You commit to your entry price, and most important, a fixed stop loss price. Your max potential loss on that single trade must be less than or equal to 2% of your entire portfolio.
And why is writing it down so important? This goes back to Daniel Kahneman's work, right? Prospect theory.
It goes straight to it. Kahneman showed we feel losses about twice as intensely as we feel gains. So when a trade goes against you, that pain, that system one screaming it, makes you hold on, hoping it comes back.
Loss aversion.
Exactly. The pre-committed written stop loss takes the decision out of that moment of panic. You just honor the contract. You don't get a vote. It prevents your own psychology from bankrupting you.
And we can even look at old school traders like Jesse Livermore for this. His whole protocol on pyramiding and the cardinal sin of averaging down.
Livermore's approach was just genius. You start with a small test position, maybe 25% of what you plan to invest. If the market moves in your favor and proves your idea right,
then you add more. You pyramid up.
Yes. You only add to your winners. You only increase your exposure when you're already right. And the inverse of that is an ironclad rule. You never average down.
Never add to a loser.
Never. That's pure ego. It's you hoping you're right when the market is telling you you're wrong. It's just digging the hole deeper.
So we've sized our individual trades. Now, what about the whole portfolio? We need an anti-fragile architecture to handle that macro risk.
Right. You have to prevent concentration risk. In DeFi, that means managing how much you have in different types of protocols and on different blockchains. So we need sector concentration limits.
Exactly. For example, you might cap all your layer one blockchains at 25% of the portfolio, all your DXs and AMMs at 15%, and the really complex stuff like derivatives, at maybe 10%.
And the logic there is just to avoid having all your eggs in one conceptual basket.
Precisely. If there's a huge regulatory shock to DXs or a major bug is found in their code, you don't want it to wipe out half your portfolio. It limits the blast radius of any single point of failure. Same thing for chain diversification. Don't put more than, say, 50% of your capital on any single blockchain.
The unifying philosophy for all of this seems to be the barbell risk strategy.
Hmm.
I love this idea. Avoid the mediocre middle.
Yes. The mediocre middle, medium risk, medium reward assets, they often give you really poor risk-adjusted returns, and they take up a ton of mental energy. The barbell simplifies everything.
So how does it work?
You put 80% of your capital in your foundation, super safe assets, DTC, ETH, high-quality stablecoins, and the really proven blue-chip DeFi protocols.
And that 80% is your survival layer.
It's your capital preservation. It's there to survive the storm. The other 20%, that's for your asymmetric bets.
The moonshots.
High risk, high reward. New protocols, small cap tokens. If that 20% goes to zero, you're only down 20%. It hurts, but you survive. But if one of those bets hits a 5x or a 10x, you've generated incredible wealth without ever risking your foundation.
But the ultimate test is always how you react when you're actually losing money in a real drawdown.
Mm-hmm.
The sources are so clear that you have to pre-program your responses.
It is non-negotiable insurance. These triggers and actions have to be automatic. You set them up now before your emotions get involved.
Okay, let's go through them. First trigger, a 10% portfolio drawdown.
The moment you hit a 10% loss, you take an immediate mandatory 48-hour pause on all new investments. That's to stop revenge trading.
Okay.
And during that pause, you review the conviction on every single one of your positions, and you actively look to take some profit off the table from any winners you still have.
And if things get worse, a 20% portfolio drawdown.
The actions get much more severe. You must reduce all positions by 50% immediately. No thinking, no second guessing. It's an automated move. You also move to a minimum of 50% stablecoins, and you stop all speculative trading.
Why that drastic 50% cut across the board?
Because at a 20% drawdown, the fear is real, but your capital is still very recoverable.
Hmm.
By cutting everything in half, you slash your volatility exposure and you give your brain massive breathing room. You de-risk because your emotions are at risk of being compromised.
And the final line, the survival protocol, the 35% portfolio drawdown trigger.
This is a crisis point. Mathematically, coming back from a 35% loss is incredibly difficult. Psychologically, it's where most people just burn out and quit.
So the action has to be extreme.
It is. You move to 75% stablecoins immediately, preserve what's left, and then you take a mandatory 1 to 4 week complete break from the markets. Step away. Reset. When you come back, you start over with tiny 1% position sizes to slowly rebuild your confidence and discipline.
It's so clear that the line between professional trading and just, you know, expensive gambling is all in this discipline. It really is a behavioral science.
It really is. I mean, you're drawing on Kahneman, Livermore, all of these people. These protocols are designed for one thing, survival. And survival is the prerequisite for all success.
So the real metrics for success aren't just your P&L.
Not at all. The real metrics are achieving zero positions that cause you sleep issues or anxiety and keeping your maximum drawdown below 15%. If you can do that, you've mastered the psychology.
Which brings us all the way back to that fundamental shift in thinking we found. The question a gambler asks is, will this go up?
Right. But the question a professional asks is completely different. It's how much should I risk to find out?
Mm.
If you can consistently answer that second question with discipline, with objectivity, the first question becomes a whole lot less stressful. Master your risk, and the profits will eventually take care of themselves.